talking to Cliff Lynch, Director of Library Automation at the University of California. Cliff, we've been looking at the question of bitmap images versus SGML as a way of moving data out onto the network. Do you think publishers will ever put their data out on the network in revisable form?
Well, it's clear, of course, that they're converting to revisable forms, and SGML seems to be a popular one inside their own processes. I know that some of the large scientific and technical publishers, people like Elsevier and Springer Verlag, are investing heavily in such conversions at this point. However, it's not clear they're really going to market this outside of their companies. They may use this as a database to spin off a series of products. One of the things that I've found in talking to publishers, particularly publishers of costly scholarly journals, is that they have a great concern about the presentation integrity of their material. They come from a print world where they invest a lot of money in nice typesetting, attractive artwork, quality paper and printing. And they're very concerned about moving into an electronic world where people are retypesetting their material on the fly, leaving out pictures or otherwise presenting a poor image of that material. So they feel, I think, to some extent more comfortable with bitmaps as a way of controlling the integrity of the presentation of their material.
I know as a programmer, when I'm implementing programs and I'm looking at network standards, which are a library of documents, I want the revisable form. I want to be able to plop out the definition of an object and stick it into my code. Is there a way to balance the presentation integrity with the need for a revisable form on the network?
Well, first let me say I absolutely agree with you on the need for revisable form. And it's quite interesting to see what's happening inside the scholarly community. For example, there's an activity called the Text Encoding Initiative, which is primarily scholars in computing and the humanities from about 22, I think, professional associations are involved in it. And what they're doing is defining a set of SGML tags to essentially support depth markup that would be suitable for computer-driven linguistic analysis, things like deep text analysis of variant editions of classic texts.
What does that mean? What is deep text analysis?
Well, the thing would be, for example, think of Shakespeare. Now, many of his plays exist in multiple versions, and scholars are very concerned with the variation between versions. They're concerned with the way words are used throughout the versions. They're concerned with allusions or stories that follow on the words. Shakespeare's plays derive to some extent from other plays, like, say, the Spanish Revenge tragedies. So there's a thought that they will be able to develop corpora of things like a Shakespeare play in all its versions, and you'd have a very intelligent viewer which would allow you to say things like, I'd like to see all the versions intercut here, or I'd like to see this as it was in the first folio, and then, no, I'd like to see it as it was in the second folio. They're starting to do real interesting things like that. Now, this is not an area where I'm expert particularly, but I do find it interesting that there is so much energy being devoted to coming up with schemes to really capture this kind of intellectual content and make it widely available for the scholarly community. Certainly, this sort of thing underscores the need for material in revisable form. Now, I think we can hope that as publishers become more comfortable with the networked environment, that we will see them becoming more comfortable with distributing revisable form material. Because it's not just the presentation integrity issue. There are also worried that in some sense the revisable form is easier to steal than a bitmapped image and is more valuable in some sense than a bitmapped image. And certainly publishers have many, many concerns about their ability to control their intellectual property in a networked environment.
Is it possible that the current generation of publishers, the firms like Prentice Hall and Addison Wesley, just won't survive the transition and it's going to take a new kind of publisher, a new type of firm to be able to handle publishing in the next 20 or 30 years?
I think that one useful way to think about this is a set of analogies that I first heard from Peter Lyman and Paul Peters, which was a way of thinking about the introduction of new technologies as going through a stage of modernization where you essentially take what you're doing already and do it more efficiently by applying technology, and then proceeding from there to innovation, which is where you use the technology to do fundamentally new things that you couldn't do prior to that technology, and then ultimately up to a transformational stage where you've kind of absorbed the technology into your processes and the things you do, and it starts fundamentally changing those. Now, I think we can view a lot of what's happening right now with the relationship between the traditional print publishers and the networked information world as modernization. For example, they're thinking basically about things where the user interface of choice is still paper. And we may talk about putting it on the network, storing it, and transporting it through the network. But the presumption, at least right now, is for anything other than pretty casual browsing, much of this will be printed back very close to the end user onto paper. That, in my view, is really just sort of a modernization activity. We're starting to see innovative things that begin to explore the sort of indigenously new capabilities of the electronic media, and those range from the sort of thing you're doing with Internet talk radio through some of the multimedia things. Much of the multimedia stuff that's most interesting, I think, up till now has been on standalone workstations, often using CDs or various kinds of video discs. I think we're going to see that change pretty quickly now that the network is getting faster, the standards are coming along, and multimedia will become much more of a networked commonplace. As that happens, I think people will start exploring more of those possibilities. Even in the sort of text-constrained network that we've been accustomed to, we have seen a number of creative people do interesting things to look at what you can do with the traditional journal as a point of departure, moving into the networked environment. Things like very heavily linked citations backwards and forwards from article to article, the ability to gather up readers' comments and reactions and attach them to a primary article, those sorts of things. Those are only the beginning of the innovation we'll see. Now, going back to the question about publishers, it's clear just given the body of rights that these publishers control, their brand name recognition, if you will, and certainly in scholarly areas, there is very much of a brand name recognition on certain journals as very prestigious journals to publish in. These will clearly move forward and modernize into the networked environment, and I think they'll be with us for a long time. How many of those publishers are prepared to take leadership positions in exploring really innovative uses of the network, I think, is an open question. And my guess is that we'll see a whole new set of publishing and information creation industries coming up alongside the old ones on the net. Few of those will be traditional publishers or information producers more generally, sort of reinventing themselves. Others will be new upstart firms. And I wouldn't focus just on the publishers. There's been a lot of buying and selling of things like vaults from large movie houses and those sorts of things, which could be quite interesting in a multimedia world.
Do you think an individual can be a publisher? A.J. Liebling has said that freedom of the press belongs to those who own one. Do you think we're entering an era where the individual can be a publisher, or are there professional skills that you have to learn before you can be one?
Well, I think we are already at the point where an individual on the network can very casually become a publisher, and many do. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or to invest very much to set up a modest FTP archive. In the most minimal case, you can think of people simply setting up mailing reflectors and sending mail into them as being publishers in a certain sense. Clearly, the network has moved forward the democratization of publishing. Now, we should point out it's not that hard to be a publisher in print anymore either, given that there's a copy place on every corner and they're not really that expensive.
It's easy to be a bad publisher.
It's especially easy to be a bad publisher, and we see a lot of badly published things in print. I think it's very challenging in the network environment because we don't know exactly what it means to be a good publisher, nor do we have as many exemplars as we do in the print world. Certainly some of the integrity issues about being a good publisher clearly extend across all media, but there are some issues, I think, that are perhaps more specific to the networked environment, which we're still understanding.
You're listening to Geek of the Week. Support for this program is provided by Sun Microsystems. Sun Microsystems, open systems for open minds. Additional support for Geek of the Week comes from O'Reilly & Associates, publishers of books that help people get more out of computers.